This podcast delves into the dark, the depraved, and all things to keep you up at night. Listener discretion is advised. Now, sit back, pull the covers over your head, and allow yourself to be taken on a journey through the abyss.
Hey, pod people. Welcome to this episode of Through the Abyss podcast. It will not be aired on its regular night. We're going to actually air it tonight, which is, where are we at? Is it Thursday?
Thursday, June 29th.
June 29th, and we're also going to throw another curveball at you without addressing a crime, unless you count the Supreme Court recent decisions that have been made as crimes, because they probably should be. Boom, boom, ka-choo! Tonight you have Ben and Steve. What's up, Steve?
Hey, how we doing, sir?
I'm doing okay. Before we dive into this Supreme Court action, you got anything planned for the weekend or anything going on for the upcoming and pending holiday?
Nope. The kids are staying with the grandparents, and so it is relaxation time this weekend.
Ooh, so it's boom boom time. Connie's gonna murder me, is she not?
I think she listens anyway.
Yeah, I don't think there's gonna be boom boom time either. Anyways,
she hears you say that.
I'm going to actually fly out tomorrow night on the red eye to Rochester for my brother's for the holiday.
The 4th.
Nice. So that'll be fun. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Seeing family, it's nice.
Yeah, it's a good thing. It's when I see all my nieces and nephews and all my siblings. And so, yeah, it's always a good time. Pod people, we hope you have a very safe holiday as well. Now, let's do this. Let's jump into this. So how long ago was the Roe versus Wade decision before we get into the recent stuff?
Was, what, 2 years ago now?
Damn. It seems like months, man, when Supreme Court reverses Roe versus Wade and makes the states have actual decision, final decision on whether or not they allow abortions in their state, which is kind of terrifying. It's kind of gives states the right to send us back to about 1957 and puts a lot of people in danger of not being able to take care of their medical needs, right? Like you're restricting women's ability to care for themselves in a way that I don't feel I have the right to tell them what to do. And we've been looking recently, right? We did the Avia case and Alexi Trevijo, can't pronounce her last name, but like where people are hiding their pregnancies and killing babies. I know that's not the majority of people, but those sort of situations wouldn't occur either if a woman could actually just make a choice as to what she does with her own body. I don't know. What do you think in those regards?
Yeah, I mean, the abortion rights topic became such a huge lightning rod, and it became that really, really easy, you know, dividing line for voters, you know, whether being pro-life or pro-choice. But, you know, I think that the conversation gets so muddied. You know, there are people that believe that you know, all abortion is just murder. But I think that the majority of those people, they view all abortions as abortions that take place because a woman is promiscuous or stupid in what she does, and she gets pregnant, and then she uses it as an alternative to birth control. Now, while that happens, I don't know the percentages, but quite a few of the abortions that happen in this country happen because of medical needs.
Right.
One of the things that gets argued all the time is the late-term abortion. And pro-life arguers, they think that there's these women out there that carry their babies to 8.5 months and then just go, you know what? No, I'm not going to do this. And then they go and get an abortion. And that's just simply not the case. That's not what happens. having watched my wife go through pregnancy, like, getting through month 5, you are very firm in your decision one way or the other. Or, you know, women don't get to that point and then just make a willy-nilly decision. Those late-term abortions are most
saving often lives. Yeah.
Out of need.
Yeah.
The child, you know, there are so many different things that can go wrong. You know, a friend of the family's had a child born with their intestines outside of their body, and I forget what what it's called, but it happens. Sometimes it happens where it can be surgically repaired after birth. Sometimes not. In this case, it could not be, and so the child lived for an excruciatingly painful hour, and then died.
Ugh. That's horrendous.
And you know, when these types of issues arise, and you know, it becomes a matter of a woman's life is at risk, or if or if the baby is in danger, or is, you know, not developing certain things that they need to live, and there's nothing that can be done, that's when you see late-term abortions most often. And, you know, you can argue pro-life, pro-choice, but you can't really argue with what's happening. In Idaho, gynecologists are running from the state because their abortion ban is so arcane and hurtful that, you know, gynecologists are afraid to serve their patients, because even if a woman, you know, we're not trusting the gynecologist to make the choice anymore, that the woman is in danger.
Right.
It's like they need a lawyer or a prosecutor to sign off on abortions now. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
And so, you know, now the other side of that coin, though, is that we had the opportunity. Have you heard the phrase to codify Roe v. Wade? Did you hear that getting thrown about after the Supreme Court decision?
No.
Okay, codify, like, means that the Congress and the Senate have the opportunity. Roe versus Wade was a Supreme Court decision that set a legal precedent, but it wasn't a law. There was no law saying abortion is legal. Now, some states, like California, have codified it.
Yeah.
And said this is now
part of what our state, yeah.
But the Congress and Senate since 1972 have had the opportunity to codify the law, and they have chosen not to. Probably because it's such a lightning rod of an issue. But
right.
And that would have solved that problem, because ultimately, you know, the Supreme Court can rule on the constitutionality of laws, but they don't get to make laws.
Yeah, I'm with you on everything you said. The only thing that I would have turned a different road on, just because that road exists too, and I'm saying this as a Christian, but I'm also extremely liberal, there are people out there that don't just think everyone's promiscuous. They actually think, like, teenage girls that were, like, raped by their relatives and carry a baby, well, that's God's decision, and this is a God versus man issue, and they make it something supernatural and something that it just isn't, right? Like, no 12-year-old should have to carry their father's child. Like, I know that's an extreme rape version, but no one should have to carry their rapist baby. Like, these are not things that are good for that person's emotional stability and well-being and future. And so, yeah, I don't think it's just that they think everyone's promiscuous. I mean, I do think there's people that think that, but I think there's also, you know, issues where they just think it's a God versus man issue. I mean, and I will say, as someone who's Christian and someone who's very liberal, and how I'm able to justify that all within internally is I just think that God places the spirit later, right? I think that God is part of those decisions. And, you know, for me, you know, not to make this a God versus man issue that I'm arguing against, but
Well, that comes into the argument, though.
I mean, yeah.
Religious beliefs are part of it.
Right. Like, this is my question to you. If you believed in God, I'm not saying you don't. I'm saying, like, if someone believes in God, don't they think that God has ultimate sovereignty over everything? So how could man mess up his plan? They can't. That's my belief.
I mean, to me, it's always been a confusing thing. You know, people who are religious, you know, they talk about a plan that is in the works and that God has a plan for everything, but then they also talk about free will.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always had a hard time squaring those two ideas. You know, like, what is it? Do we have free will, or is there a predestination already set for us? And free will is then just an illusion, you know, that what we've chosen to do is already been set in stone. It was already decided when we were born. I think that's much even more cosmic question than the one we're grappling with
from mm-hmm.
the Supreme Court decision. But, you know, I think that the problem, and we're going to talk about Roe v. Wade later, because we're going to talk about other cases that the Supreme Court has heard and will be releasing decisions on. But I think that, you know, ultimately, was it Christ that said, "Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's"?
See, yes.
I think that you have to have a distinct line between how to legislate a society versus the morality you choose to live with. If you believe that abortion is murder and is a sin, and then
you don't do it.
Have one.
Right.
You don't have
you
one.
Don't do it, but, and you can verbally encourage people not to.
Right, but you don't get to dictate morality.
Right.
And therefore dictate healthcare. Because abortion is healthcare. It is part of my mother had an abortion by the legal definition between my brother and I.
Yeah,
she had a miscarriage. She had a ectopic.
Okay.
So she got pregnant, and the egg, you know, travels from the ovary down the fallopian tube to the uterus. Well, in an ectopic pregnancy, the egg stops or goes back up into the fallopian tube and starts to grow in the tube rather than in the uterus. And it is extremely dangerous. It is, you know, like, if you don't get medical attention quickly, it can be deadly. And my mother had to have emergency surgery, and removing the inseminated egg from the body is an abortion.
Right.
But if they didn't do it, she wouldn't survive.
Right. Even though the baby can't survive from those either, from what
exactly.
I...
Exactly.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, there's no way of then taking that developing, you know, zygote or whatever you want to call it, and planting it in the uterus. That's not possible as far as science is concerned now. But that's still considered an abortion, and it's still, like, there are states that are battling with this, that, you know, is that, if, you know, was it God's will for my mother to die?
Right.
That's the, you know, and so, yeah, she still calls me her rainbow baby, because I went after a miscarriage, and that's what you call that. But, and the doctors made sure that I could survive by saving her.
Right. You wouldn't be here had that not occurred. There's a chance you wouldn't have been. But for me, too, it's like a question of when does it stop? Because these same religious people that are against abortions are also against contraceptives. So it's like, are we going to make condoms illegal? Or are we going to make the pill illegal? When does it stop?
Look, I don't want to say the churches do this on purpose necessarily, but let's look at, like, the Mormon Church, or you look at churches need new generations of people. The Catholic Church is really struggling because their members are getting older, and their children are not staying with the Catholic Church. And part of the way that you keep your church growing is having young people, having children young, and needing more support from the community. And so the church is there to provide it. And so then it keeps you connected and keep coming back to the church. And then your children are raised in it more, and they're more likely to stay, and this is perpetuating. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that is a tenet of the Mormon church, is to get married young and to procreate exuberantly.
Yes. I would say, let's shift gears and talk about the big decision that came out today, right? So today the Supreme Court decided that the affirmative action that was putting the diversity into college admissions is no longer acceptable, and that colleges should base everyone completely based on their application and not any sort of other factors. So, wow, there's a lot of problems with this, right? And the major one being that you still don't have the extreme diversity in a lot of schools. I know, what, Harvard's recently gone through a lot of lawsuits and things because they've been keeping Asian people out. And there's a lot of schools with issues, and there's not a lot of diversity. And you're also still, by not having minorities brought in larger quantities to some extent, you're also kind of kicking poor people down, right? Because you're going to end up with just a bunch of rich white guys, right? And I don't know, for me this decision just feels like you got a bunch of old scared white dudes who are like, oh no, it's starting to level out, let's do something drastic.
Well, I think that affirmative action has always been a target because white men have always felt scared by it and yeah, targeted by it. They have felt victimized, and so they're always looking for a way. And I think that the statistical issue at, like, Harvard, where you have the, you know, Asian students with the deck stacked extremely against them because they are hitting the other metrics at such a higher pace than every other student. I mean, their test scores are higher, their involvement is higher, they are achieving across the board at a higher level. And so if there wasn't a change in how, you know, like the number of Asian students taken into Harvard, then they were going to dominate the student population. Now, that was a way to attack affirmative action in general. Now, affirmative action, of course, is born from, you know, minorities in this country having less opportunities.
Right.
They have less wealth. They have less, and they were being offered less opportunities by systems that were put in place that were not to their benefit, that were definitely benefiting white men. And so you have systems like this that are trying to balance diversity, trying to say, how can we give more opportunities to black students who might have the same ability to achieve but don't have the same opportunities? Like,
right,
for instance, you know, you get a kid from a richer neighborhood, which is statistically going to be whiter. Their school offers more AP classes, so the student's GPA is going to be higher. The student can achieve more through the AP tests. They have more opportunities within the school for funding ACT and SAT prep courses. They have more extracurricular activities and opportunities for those kids. Those kids, coming from a wealthier background, then have an opportunity to participate in more of the extracurricular activities because they don't have to then work jobs,
right, right,
after school to help their parents pay for, you know, their bills and so on. And so poverty perpetuates poverty, money perpetuates money. And so the idea was that let's try to figure out how to get more opportunities for them. Now, the extreme of what's happened at Harvard was an opportunity to attack this entire system. But I think that there are schools that are doing a bad job at using it. You know, Harvard, I believe, let's see, let me look at the statistic.
Yeah, you're good. While you're looking at that, I would just say the main thought that I have on this is the only way you would get rid of affirmative action for college admissions or for anything, for hiring at jobs and things, is if we were at the point where every race had the same opportunities. And there's been tons of articles coming out saying, you know, this is going to mostly affect Black students and Latino students. So are Blacks and Latinos given the same opportunities now as white students? And the answer is definitely no, right? So it's lunacy to think that we're at a point where you could get rid of it.
So this is the statistic I was looking for. So a study on Harvard finds that 43% of the white students that are there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So almost half the white students are either legacy students, athletes, or they're related to donors or staff.
Oh, Lord.
So in other words, either their family, they had a family member who went to Harvard, and that is a check mark in their favor, and that does get them. So that is, in a sense, white affirmative action.
Yeah.
That schools are allowed to use legacy as a factor.
Yeah, they're not there for merit.
Right. So then athletics, and then related to donors or staff. So then again, money breeds money. Your family has money, you have a better chance of getting into Harvard if you're a white student.
Yeah, it's just nepotism. It's not based on your merit at all. And affirmative action isn't let's put someone who's completely unqualified into a position just because they fit a minority category. It's if people are equal, we're taking the minority to make it even out. Right? Yeah. Like, so this, like, you get in just because you're related to Joe Schmo is crazy.
Also, 14% of students at Harvard are white legacies. 7% of the students at Harvard are Black.
Total, so 7%.
Double, total, 7% are African.
So double legacies over Black students, yeah, in general.
Yeah. And so what group do you think affirmative action has helped the most historically?
I mean,
what group of people?
Black people, I would assume.
Nope.
Who?
There is one group of people who affirmative action has helped more than every other group combined.
Wow.
White women.
White women, okay.
White women.
You know why? You know why? I'll tell you why. Because when you got these old white men who have been ruling this country forever, and you're like, look, we got to do something because there's just a bunch of old white men, even though they don't respect women, which they should, white women is the lesser of all the evils, because at least it's not someone of another race, because that's how effed up these dudes are. That's how effed up our country is. And white women, I do want you to succeed as well. I'm just saying that there shouldn't be one group that is helped the most by affirmative action. It should be across the board, because the whole point is to make us the melting pot that we're supposed to be. Like I was telling you, my school, the president put out a letter today, and she summed it up very beautifully. It's like, we're going to continue to make the school as diverse as possible because we're putting out people that are going to help a diverse community, and you need all of the people that go to this school to be reflective of that diverse community, right? Like, our country is a diverse mix of human beings, and we need people in every position of all different colors and races and cultures, and, you know, like we had the Little Mermaid argument before. It's like, you need little Black girls to see their hero be someone of their same race, because it is beautiful watching those videos where they cry and they're so happy and they're like, she's like me, right? Like, we need that. The world needs that.
Right. I think that should be the white women have succeeded so much on through affirmative action should be a success story.
Yeah.
Not detriment. But what I mean is, like, when you take this away, you know, there's a chance that either one, it's going to negatively impact people that even don't realize, or two, you're closing the gate before other people have a chance to
succeed as well.
As well. Right, and you know, and I think we see private industry trying to do this as well because they understand the benefits of diversity. In the NFL, have you ever heard of the Rooney?
Say it again.
The Rooney Rule.
The Rooney Rule. No.
Yeah. The Rooneys were the owners of the Steelers, I believe. There's a rule in place now that if a team has a head coaching vacancy, right, they fired their head coach has quit, and they need to hire a new head coach, that team has to interview a candidate of color before hiring their choice. So they don't have to hire a candidate of color,
but they have to interview.
They have to give a candidate of color an interview.
Right? Yeah.
And then that has grown, actually, and my favorite team, the 49ers, benefited from this. The 49ers have gotten extra draft picks because they have had multiple candidates over the course of the last, like, 3 years get, and it doesn't, it's not just head coach, it's also general manager. But they get extra draft picks because they've had coordinators who were persons of color who were then hired as head coaches or general managers. And the team, then the 49ers get an extra draft pick because they lost a coordinator of color.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is, and it's you know, it works.
Yeah, it sounds like a great thing, and like, but for me, it's just mind-boggling because I've never really like paid attention to it. But it's like you've got so many athletes in the NFL who are people of color that it's crazy that, of course, there weren't enough coaches and coordinators, and because the best coaches aren't always the players, but a lot of times are the people that did it and know what they're doing. And it's crazy that you've got this diverse mix of athletes, but you don't have that diversity when it comes to the people in charge.
And that was the argument for a long time, but now you're seeing some of the smartest players go into coaching afterward. And you know, I mean, coaching is extremely hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, a lot of players, they've got money, they choose to go into the booth, you know, and be sideline reporters or game, you know, commentators. But the ones that choose to pursue coaching, you know, that's an incredibly difficult path to take. And I think that just giving opportunities, like, you know, just saying you need to interview someone of color, I think is a great opportunity, and you saw more coaches of color being hired because of that.
Yeah.
Just because it was like, oh, man, this guy is going to be impressive.
Until the Supreme Court gets their hands on it.
Well, and, you know, the thing is, like, they can't dictate that to the you know, like, to the NFL necessarily, and I think that colleges are going to suffer if they don't have an eye toward diversity.
I think most colleges that were already looking to have diverse populations are going to continue to do what they were doing.
Yeah, I think they're going to find different ways to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, it's they're not going to be as obvious about it, but it's going to still be there. I think there's people out there who believe that there's this perfect meritocracy system that could or does exist, where everyone can just be judged by their merit, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with that is, the merit for, like, getting into a college is so subjective. I mean, what are we going to base it on? Are we going to base it on an essay? an essay where a student is supposed to be writing about, you know, their life experiences when they're 17 years old.
Right. They've had no life experience.
What about engineering and science students who are not as, don't have the same ability to write? Do those essays indicate success?
Right. And if, like, the essay is looking for what is your your path? What's your career path? I mean, I think a lot of times path of what your focus is might actually change, breathe and live and grow. And you can't expect someone to know their career path at 17, 18 years old, right? Some do. That's a miracle, though.
Oh, it's rare and it's fantastic, but and then GPA is worthless because you can't compare an A in this class with an A from a class from a high school down the road, because they're different teachers, they're different requirements. Some teachers are terrible and just hand out A's. And
yeah, absolutely.
Are incredibly strict, and a B plus is like a badge of honor. And yet their GPA would suffer in that regard. And so all of these subjective indicators, it really comes down to, you give a person an opportunity to succeed in the classroom, and we see if they can do it.
Right.
And students of color are performing extremely well in colleges across the country. They simply are. Yeah. And I think that's the best evidence for keeping it. But I can understand from a legal aspect why we wouldn't want to base admission into universities, which is considered kind of a gateway to success in this country, based solely on race. I can understand the logic behind that.
Yeah, based solely, but it should definitely be allowed to be a factor. And
I think you're right, and I think they're gonna figure out ways to accomplish that anyway. I just I don't want institutions to have an excuse to marginalize people again.
Yeah, it's just like with this striking down of Roe versus Wade, and now this, it just feels a lot like we're going back into the 50s.
Well, education has been historically a weapon used against people of color in this country. First when you have the Jim Crow laws and you have the segregation, you have education, you have the best schools for the whites and the lesser schools and resources for the blacks.
Yeah.
And then you have desegregation and students coming into white schools, and so that's met with violence, and then ultimately what happens is you see this explosion of private schools in this country, pop up as ways to segregate your white kid. So then people with money can pay for their white kid to be pulled out and go here.
Right.
And so now you have these private schools that are built for that. And I don't know how that's gonna react.
Yeah.
How that's gonna play out.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're gonna see, right? And it's just, we've got a very scary Supreme Court right now that are just making decisions that aren't in the benefit of the people. But yeah, I mean, hopefully there's workarounds. All right, so let's shift our gears and talk a little bit about this Lori Smith lady, right? So she is the owner of 303 Creative, and she wanted to do wedding design websites since she was a child, and she's Christian, and she does all these websites for people, designing for nuptials and celebrations for same-sex couples. However, a lot of her artwork, what she does is she makes words and puts like these like blessings and things towards people that are getting married, and she refuses to do that for the LGBTQ community because she says that she's not going to put up words that she doesn't agree with. So this has been gone all the way to the Supreme Court now, and so she's doing a public service. Is she allowed to decide who she does that service for?
And so this is a decision that will be coming.
Right, this is tomorrow. This is going to be decided tomorrow.
So we don't know exactly how the court is going to rule yet.
We do not know. They haven't been making great decisions, But if you want to give them the benefit of the doubt, they're going to say this lady, if she's going to do this for the public, she's going to do it for everyone, correct?
I mean, that's the idea behind, you know, the laws that were put in place to make sure that discrimination laws, so that
right.
You know, you can't discriminate, services, hiring practices, housing from any for reasons of like age, sex, sexual orientation, and so on. I worry that the court is going to rule, you know, in favor of what they're terming religious freedom, but I feel like that's such a misnomer. Like, I don't feel like this is religious freedom. I feel like this is, you know, religious projection that our society has to bend to the will of the religious,
right,
rather than the religious get to get some sort of freedom.
Yeah. So people are arguing too, right, that this might violate her free speech because and First Amendment. But this case, actually, they're saying that the reason they think that it's gone all the way to Supreme Court is because there was a similar case in 2017 that I kind of remember. In Lakewood, a bakery called Masterpiece Cake Shop was against a gay couple in Denver who asked for a wedding cake and was denied. So this cake shop owner said he wasn't going to make this cake for these guys because they were gay. And the court really declined to definitively answer the question at hand. So many legal experts say that the justices took up this 303 creative, this Lori Smith case, to finally make a decision in this regard. So this is something that's ongoing. We kind of were discussing earlier, right, like, what if you are a lawyer? You don't have to defend someone because they're gay? What if you're a doctor? You don't have to keep someone alive because they're gay? These people are doing public services. They need to do that service for every human being.
Right, and if you are going to put yourself and your skill into the public market space, then you have to be available to the public. You know, now that being said, there's a lot of workarounds. You know, the first thing that came to mind for me was like Chick-fil-A. Like, they don't necessarily say it, but you know, they hire, you know, their hiring practices have been considered, you know, a gray area here. They try to hire people with the same religious beliefs as their founder, as their, you know, with the Christian faith.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you're a wedding cake maker, you know, and a couple comes in and wants to make a cake, you know, how many times has a baker maybe said, you know, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm book solid for the next 2 months. I don't have, you know, any space for you, you know, right now. But really, it's because it's a gay couple.
Right.
Or, you know, how often, Dateline all the time do things like they'll have a potential renter for an apartment. You know, they'll have a black actor and a white actor go in for the same apartment, and suddenly it's rented when the black person shows up, but for the white person it's not. And, you know, I think people get away with that kind of stuff all the time, and this court filing is trying to legalize that, essentially.
Right.
To say, no, I get to say no, you know. And this whole idea of sincerely held religious beliefs, what the hell does that mean? Like, that phrase comes up over and over again in laws and in, you know, like, oh, well, you know, if they have sincerely held religious beliefs, they can get out of taking...
Right. Yeah, because that phrase alone says like, look, this person's are sincere. We're going to judge this person over here as not sincere, so they can't do that. like, you can't decide who's... beliefs are sincere and whose beliefs aren't sincere, and then let them treat people differently because of that, right? It's ridiculous.
It's insane. And then to say, like, you know, What's the next court filing going to be? That I opened up a restaurant, but it's only for white people,
right?
Because my religious beliefs say that black people are.
I'm sorry, State Attorney General Weiser said exactly what you just said. This case would create a loophole that an individual could say, because I'm offering some product or service with an expressive element, I get to exclude, and you can fill in the blank here. It could be gays or lesbians, but it could be Jews or Mormons, or it could be African Americans. That would be a revolution in our law. That would be a radical step, and it would undermine this core civil rights commitment that we've had for generations. It's lunacy, right?
It's insane. Now, here's the this interesting story that I came across, and talking about Lori Smith, the wedding website creator, right? Part of her story, right? So listen to this. So long before the Supreme Court took up one of the last remaining cases it will decide this session, the 303 Creative versus Elinus case concerning a Colorado web designer who refuses to make websites for same-sex weddings and seeks an exemption from anti-discrimination laws, there was a couple named Stuart and Mike. According to court filings from the plaintiff, that would be Lori Smith, Stuart contacted Smith in September 2016 about his wedding to Mike early next year. He wrote that they would love some design work done for our invites, place names, etc. We might also stretch to a website. Stuart included his phone number, email address, and the URL of his own website. He was a designer too, and the site showed. So, this reporter decided to call Stuart because Stuart's phone number, email address, website, they were all in the court filings.
Yeah.
The filings that had been to the Supreme Court, right? So they're expected to deliver this, and I think this is afterwards. So, yes, that was his name, phone number, email address, and website and inquiry, but he never sent this form, he said. And at the time it was sent, he was married to a woman. If somebody's pulled my information as some kind of supporting information or documentation, somebody's falsified it, Stuart explained. Stuart's last name is not included in the filing, though we will be referring to him by his first name in this story. I wouldn't want anybody to make me a wedding website, he continued, sounding a bit puzzled, but good-natured about the whole thing. I'm married. I have a child. I'm not really sure where that came from, but somebody's using false information in the Supreme Court filing document.
Wow.
So, and I don't know how this is going to affect anything, and I don't know, you know, if this story is going to get bigger, and, you know, if they rule against Lori Smith, then, you know, I think it dies. But if they rule in favor of this, I have to assume that her filing, that is some kind of fraud, you know, that this is, that she's lying on here.
You know what you should automatically know makes you a bad human? If you have to file for an anti-discrimination exemption.
Well, and it's obvious. It's obvious that she's trying to be this is her claim to fame. You know, she's going to be that, who was that? That Davis lady in Kentucky that made headlines like 10 years ago because she refused to sign. She was at the clerk of courts for a county in Kentucky.
Ooh.
And she refused to sign marriage certificates.
Yeah, I remember that.
Marriage certificates. She refused to do her job.
Yeah.
She refused to do it.
Didn't she also get fired?
I think that ultimately they ended up signing it, and then she stepped down from it. But it was an elected office.
Yeah.
And so, but she was looking to be famous for, you know, for fighting that fight. And that's what I think this woman is trying to do. She's trying to be, you know, famous for this. And, but, you know, I don't know, like, if you compare it to, like, the Hobby Lobby Supreme Court decision a few years ago, remember when Obamacare came out and it laid out certain requirements for what employee health care needed to cover it to be Hobby Lobby sued the government over it, and they said that they didn't want to have to cover any of their employees' birth control because it was against their religious beliefs. And they won. And, you know, the Supreme Court upheld their right not to do that. And so that, you know, and that was when the court was 5-4 conservative. Now it's 6-3 conservative. So, you know, this definitely scares me how they're going to rule on this. But, you know, it's such a Pandora's box.
Right. Yeah. I mean, ugh. Gosh, for me, it's like if they rule in this person's favor, it's like it's insanity because, like the attorney general said, the state attorney general, where would it stop? Right, you could pretty much discriminate against who you want. Why is there the ability to get an exemption from anti-discrimination laws? Why does that even exist?
You know, religious beliefs are the number one. You know, a thing. I think that there might be cases where, like, the population of your area does not allow you to hire a certain number of minorities, perhaps, or, you know, something to that effect. I don't know. I can't think of any good reasons for exemptions from that. And there shouldn't be too many, you know. Religious exemptions seem to be the most popular exemptions. I mean, that's why, like, kids are supposed to be vaccinated when they go to school. Except, like, people can, you know, submit a religious exemption form. And they're never questioned. They never go to these people's churches and say, okay, show me in your religious texts where it says that. Just if they file it, they don't have to get vaccinated, you know.
Yeah.
And so the government is really scared of religious entities. I mean, you know, from churches not paying property taxes and any kind of taxes to religious exemptions for all kinds of things.
Damn.
You know, I think there's a fear. I think the government has a certain amount of fear for churches and religions.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, for sure. Dale Carpenter, constitutional law professor at Southern Methodist University Dedman School of Law, says that she is utilizing words in what she does, and it's not the same as a tire salesman. Does any of that matter to you? Like, is there a difference?
Well, no.
No, right?
I mean, like, a tire salesman, you know, has to use words as well in their advertisement and their description and when they sell. But I don't know how words would be different.
Yeah. I mean, basically, she's just saying she doesn't have any kind words to say for a gay marriage, right?
And I think this is a matter that needs to be codified as well. You know, that, like, you know, gay marriage is a new thing nationally. You know, once the Supreme Court ruled that, you know, gay marriage can be upheld across the country and it's no longer a state's right issue, and that same-sex marriage can be acknowledged across, then, you know, you then have things open up. And this is how the law should or does operate, is that, you know, as we change the way we operate as a country, we have to then test our laws and, you know, and fix them. And so, you know, same-sex marriage is a legally accepted union. And so if you're going to put yourself out there as a wedding cake baker, you have to be willing to serve weddings. Not just straight weddings, but weddings. The same way that if you have an apartment for people to live in,
right,
you can't just say this apartment is for white people to live in. It's the exact same thing. And to say that it is somehow religious discrimination because people that bake a cake for a same-sex wedding are then somehow inherently, you know, being active in the sin that they hate. Well, you got two choices. One, change your career.
Right, right. Don't bake cakes for weddings, yeah.
Right. Or two, suck it up and realize that you're just baking a cake. You have nothing to do with whatever sin you perceive them to be committing. Your cake did not allow them to get married. That you're not, you know.
And you know what, Steve? I know you cringe when you hear the name Jesus, but I gotta say, I don't think when he changed the water to wine in Canaan, he was like, "Hey, if any of you out there are gay at this wedding, don't be touching my wine."
I'm pretty sure he didn't, and I don't, you know. I think too many Christians have really gotten away from what the real teachings.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and that's my point with that. I'm not trying to be silly on a serious topic, but Christianity is not what these people are making it. And that's my biggest issue, is that they're not real Christians, right? So Christianity gets a bad name. I hate when I see stuff like this because it just makes Christians look worse and worse. And it's like, Jesus is not about any of this, right? Like, no, Jesus didn't, in his 33 years, he has no preachings in the New Testament, homosexuality at all. It's not even in there.
Yeah. No, I from a legal standpoint, I can't. I'm hoping, because, you know, the Supreme Court gets to choose what cases they take on. And, you know, they take on cases that they want to make a statement with. Either they want to set a precedent, they want to change a precedent, they want to establish something. They're never going to take on a case and rule that everything was done the right way and the courts below them and there are no changes needed to be made. You know, like, that's just not what they're going to do. They're going to take on cases that they want to make a statement with. And so, you know, it's scary that they might want to make a statement with this to say, oh, you know, religious freedom should extend to doing whatever you want to do with your companies. I'm hoping that Roberts, the Chief Justice who makes the decisions on this, or, you know, who is in charge of making the decisions of the cases that they bring in, I'm hoping that he chose this case and that we'll see, you know, by this, that this case will now set a precedent that, no, you are in the public square, you have to abide by discrimination laws.
Yeah.
Period.
Period. Yeah. Exemptions. I mean, unless there's something I'm not seeing, shouldn't even be a thing. So this Gerald Groff case, right? The former postal worker who was arguing he is a Christian who wanted to have Sundays off. It looks like that was one that was actually decided today, right? The Supreme Court on Thursday, which is today, used the case of Christian mail carrier who did not want to work on Sundays to solidify protections for workers who ask off for religious accommodations. In a unanimous decision, the justices made clear that workers who ask for accommodations, such as taking the Sabbath off, should have their request honored unless employers show that doing so would result in substantially increased costs to the business. So, I mean, we kind of were discussing this earlier as well, and I think we're both good with this is something that is okay. My only thing is, going back to the other case, it's like, this is okay if we support these Christians' rights to have off certain religious holidays and things, but we also got to make sure that the cake maker, if she's going to be in the public, is making cakes for everyone, right? Like, we've got to also support gay rights too, right? Like, I'm good with this, but we got to do the right thing in the other cases as well.
Yeah, and it sounds like, at least, I don't know if it did get decided or not, or if they changed the filing of it. I gotta look into that. But, like, it sounds like the justices were fairly unanimous in the way that they were approaching the case and the arguments. Because during the arguments, I think you get a lot of people that follow the Supreme Court get a chance to kind of listen to what kind of questions are being asked and get a sense of of how the justices feel about the case. And so most of them were, you know, in the corner, or were backing this idea that you know, employers should make accommodations for religious needs. And I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I've been, you know, I've been bashing religion a little bit in this episode, but it's not that. You know, sincerely held beliefs are fine, and they're wonderful. People have faith, and they should, and it's beautiful. Ben, I honor your faith, and I think it's wonderful that you have it. And I think that your employer or your school should be ready to make reasonable accommodations for your needs. And so with the Postal Service making him work on Sundays to deliver Amazon packages, you know, I think that employers have to be willing to be flexible and personal. One of the things that I was saying to you was like, we grew up, it was, work was 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, and that was it. That's when you worked. And there were, you know, there was the outliers of people that worked in, like, convenience stores and things that worked the odd hours, but most people were working 9 to 5, 40 hours a week, Monday through Friday. But now, you know, work can be anywhere that you put it, 24/7. We have access to you know, telecommuting and work from home. I think the pandemic really opened up this idea that, like, unconventional approaches to employment can be beneficial to the company and to the employee. And so, with all of that being said, I think employers have to be versatile enough to look at what they have to accomplish and figure out how they can accomplish it with the resources that they have. And one of them being, okay, it's Sunday, and, you know, this person is, you know, honoring the Sabbath, and they are not allowed to work on this day, so we have to find another person that can complete this, or we have to figure out how to get it done another way.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's unreasonable.
I don't think it's unreasonable either. I just see a scary trend in all this, and I mean, I think this is something we already knew. But you take away, aside the last case that we're going to talk about, which is not religiously motivated, but you're looking at the court supporting Groff. We don't know yet whether or not they're going to support Smith, right? If they support Smith, that's horrendous, right? She's in the public, and she's only going to serve a portion of the public and break anti-discrimination laws, which is crazy. Obviously the Roe versus Wade isn't one that was decided now, but it was decided by these same justices, and that's one that's very much religiously motivated too, because it's going against abortion, because God wants all those babies, right? So my point is, it's just like, where's the separation of church and state?
Well, and I think that, you know, I think you have a lot. The church has been trying to break down that separation for forever, you know, since it was put up. I mean, that wall was put up, and the church has been banging on it. And I think that you know, the easiest thing to say is that the separation is when it affects you versus when it affects other people. You know, an employer reasonably accommodating your religious beliefs and needs is affecting you. That's yours. If you are Muslim and you have to pray 5 times a day, then I think that accommodating a day where you have, you know, maybe a longer working day with more breaks in between is not an unreasonable thing to do in most
right.
circumstances.
Yeah, and I agree. But, you know, I just see a court. I agree. I just see a court that's overall pushing the Christian agenda.
Well, and maybe going back to what I said about why the courts pick these cases, maybe, you know, hopefully, here's, you know, I'm guessing at this, but maybe Roberts wants to cut that line.
Hopefully.
To establish, like, look, you have a company that serves the public domain, you cannot discriminate against the public.
Right, right. We can't fuck with discrimination.
Affecting other people.
Yeah.
And then, and even with the Roe versus Wade decision, as damaging as it was, and it has been damaging, and it will continue to be damaging for the foreseeable future, I understand why it was somewhat legally legitimate, and that being that we had not codified it yet. We had not made it law. It needs to be made into law. And I think that, you know, we're forcing the states to do it. It is going to create a terrible, terrible situation that it already has. And I think either the Congress is going to take care of that, and they're going to codify it, or it's going to become a worse and worse and worse problem, especially with states now trying to create laws making it illegal for you to travel to another state to have an abortion.
Look, you're not even giving people options. I mean, that's their point. They don't want people to have options. They don't want abortions. But it's like, you can't do that. I mean, then you're just gonna have people moving to other states, and it's just gonna be a handful of states that allow abortions that are gonna have all the people, right? So,
and you know, you're gonna see a rise in the infant mortality rate. You're gonna see a rise in the mortality rate of the mothers because they're not getting the care that they need because gynecologists or OBGYNs want to get the hell away from states that are, you know, criminalizing their work.
Yeah.
And so it created chaos. But I from a legal standpoint, I kind of understand it. Just because it wasn't put into law already, and they were saying, well, now you have to. Now, I disagree with it wholeheartedly. I think that it was bought and paid for. You know, the Supreme Court has been bought and paid for. But that's the thing, is, you know, you can make legal arguments for it, and that's, you know. And so, but hopefully what Roberts is trying to do, because Roberts has been notoriously one of the more moderate conservatives on the court, and he very much, you know, considers his own legacy and what it's going to mean for him. And wants to not be seen as an extreme, doesn't want this court to be an extreme court. So hopefully what we're going to see is him dividing that line, saying, look, religious freedom does apply to how people live their own personal lives, like at work, but it does not apply to how you treat other people, i.e. the companies that you create in the public space offering services. And so Hopefully we're going to see that line be, and so maybe that's why he took both of those cases, so he could draw that line and say, look, yes, and this, no. That's my hope for how we're going to see this play out.
Right. Yeah, I mean, hopefully. And I think you're probably right, and hopefully they'll return a good decision on that one. And hopefully they'll return a good decision on the last one we're going to talk about, too, because I think it affects both of us. But you got Biden's attempt to give $10,000 to everyone that earns under $200,000 that has student loan debts, and $20,000 to anyone that had a Pell Grant. And the courts will make that final decision on that tomorrow. Of course, you have the left is supporting it and saying that Biden should do more, and they're saying that he had different routes he could have taken on it. I mean, they're supportive of what he's doing as well, but they're hopeful that that's going to be passed tomorrow. And then you have the extreme right, who's saying it's going to destroy the economy. Like, it's lunacy, and everyone's going to suffer because it's going to put us into a huge recession. And so the majority of people that the left is saying that are going to be hurt if it doesn't go through are minorities and women. Actually, I saw was the largest category that's going to be affected. And the right is saying everyone's going to be affected because if it goes through, it's going to destroy the economy. So,
you know, so I'm not entirely sure what the legal arguments are for you know, for arguing that it for this not to be allowed, you know, like to so the arguments against
because it's states. Yeah, states are suing.
Yeah. I think that this is a federal loan. You know, these are federal loans, so I don't think that the states have any standing in this.
Right. I think the main argument from the states is that this HEROES Act was made for, like, disaster situations and that it doesn't apply to school loans, but Biden's kind of going from the angle that the pandemic was such a disaster that it affected people financially and it made it harder for them to pay, and so it's part of that. But the people that are, or the states that are arguing against it, are saying it's not what the HERO Act was intended for.
Right. And, you know, so from a legal perspective, I don't know what the right thing to do is, but from an ideological standpoint, I love this idea, and I think that, you know, you look at every president, each side of the political spectrum wants to goose the economy in some way.
Yeah.
They're looking to boost it. And when it's the conservatives, they want to cut taxes. Look at the Trump tax cuts. They were intended to boost the economy by putting more money into people's hands. But what you end up doing is you put money in the hands of the top 10% with those tax cuts, because that's where the money is intended to go. And it's this idea that the job creators, well, they're the job creators, so if we let them have more money, create more jobs, or they'll put it back into their companies and they'll pay their workers more. And that's the trickle-down economics, and it's bullshit.
Yeah.
It does not work. And so this, as an economic strategy, is great. It's you know, you're really targeting the middle class, you know? You're targeting people who are in the middle class, but who are, you know, maybe not, I don't want to say struggling, they're not struggling with poverty, well, some are, I'm sure, but, like, the people that have student loans are the people who benefited from an educational system, but then, you know, are suffering from really predatory loan practices by the federal government. You know, I mean, you hear stories of people who borrowed $20,000 and they've been paying money back for 20 years and now they owe $22,000.
Right.
Because it's a constant. And I love the idea. I wish they would do more. I mean, that would definitely benefit me and my family. And I've had more money because of the loan pauses, and I've been able to use that money in the economy. It's not, you know, you give more money to Walmart, that money is not going back in the hands of the workers. That money is either buying stock back or it's going to the Cayman Islands.
Right.
And then it's getting out of the economy. You put money in my hands, or you put money in your hands, well, then that money's going back into the economy, buying a new car. That's going into the economy, you know, like me, the next thing I want to do, we bought a house, you know, a couple years ago, we'd like to expand the driveway. And so if I had a little bit extra money right now, I would be hiring a company to come and add some concrete. So now that money's going into the economy. And so I think, as far as, you know, this is just economic stimulation. It's an attempt to do that. That's, and I think this idea of fighting it I think part of the reason that the right is fighting it so hard is because it will work. It will help. It will be a benefit.
And because it's not their idea, right? Like,
yeah.
Because honestly, like when Trump was in office and he's given out like the COVID payments and whatever, if that had been Biden, they would have been hating all over that.
Right. Well, when people who have paid their loans back or who went to college are like, well, we didn't get that. Well, first of all, you know,
congratulations, you have more money than me.
if my father died of cancer and then they cured it, well, do I get to be mad at the next person who survives that same cancer?
Hopefully you would be like, thank God that horrible disease has been taken care of, right? Like,
yeah. But then also, like, the exponential growth in college cost has been insane. And you know, when our parents were younger, they could work a part-time job and pay for college.
Right.
Yeah. You know, now, I mean, college will be the, I mean, right now the way it's trending, I'll pay more for my son to go to college than I would for this house.
Right.
I have to pay for full tuition. That's the single biggest, you know, cost in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get it. So
no, I don't either, and I think there a lot of people are saying that the legal argument is actually showing a good sign, because Kavanaugh yesterday or the day before, one of the last 2 days, decided in a different case that states weren't allowed to sue the government over other things. So they're saying maybe that's kind of showing that this is going to be knocked down. But I really feel like you hit the nail on the head when you were talking about how these loans, I mean, everyone's been talking about how they're predatory loans, right? Like, you've got these huge interest rates, like you said, that are making it so that they just grow and grow and grow no matter what you're paying. And I can say, like, at least from my standpoint, mine is high enough. If you just took away all the interest, it'd be a lot more money than what Biden's giving me back. So take away the interest, just make us pay what we actually owe, right? Why don't we do that?
Right.
Like, right. It's not like we're stealing from anybody. Like, I just want to pay what I owe. I don't want to pay this massive interest.
Right.
And yes, I agreed to it back in 1996 when I started this process and I didn't know anything about life, right? You know, because it's the same as, I remember when I first got to OSU and we're walking around for like freshman orientation, and like in the middle of campus, there's just multiple tables with like people giving credit cards to 18-year-olds, right? And it's like,
yeah,
same kind of shit where it's like they're just taking advantage of young people who don't know any better, right? And the school loans are the same deal. I mean, I think most people would still say still go to college and get it done, and I wouldn't have not been there looking back. But in the same respect, like, they're taking advantage of kids, right? Because the interest rates are ridiculous.
Yeah. No. So here's some of the commentary on the court's arguing. So the skepticism seemed to be among primarily the court's conservative wing. And it's always hard to predict, but my sense after the questioning was that there may be five conservative justices who, looking at the merits of the case, would not uphold the student loan forgiveness plan. So there might be some trouble here.
Yeah.
But standing in their way of getting the merits of the program is a big hurdle, and that's called standing. Justice Barrett, along with the court's liberal wing, was very focused on standing, which we've talked about before. It's legal right to actually sue, and here, the challengers have to show that they have a specialized injury, a concrete injury that is traceable to the conduct of the Education Department policy, and that the court can remedy it. It's a huge hurdle in my sense after the arguments was also that the lawyers of the challengers were not making really as strong an argument as the government made to oppose standing. If the court doesn't find standing, the case goes away and the program stands. But if they do, they can go on to the merits. And I also know that if you have five justices who really want to get to the merits, they may likely find standing some way. And then, so here's John Roberts questioning the Biden administration's attorney. This is Roberts.
Okay.
The case reminds me of one we had a few years ago under a different administration, where the administration tried, acting on its own, to cancel the Dreamers program, and we blocked that effort. So that was Trump trying to get rid of the Dreamers Act, where, you know, that Obama had set up the Dreamers, who children who were born in this country to undocumented immigrants, were allowed to stay and work. Or as long as they showed, you know, that they passed background checks and that they, you know, like, hit certain milestones. So then I just wonder, given the posture of the case and given our historic concern about separation of powers, that you would recognize at least that this is a case that presents extraordinarily serious, important issues about the role of Congress. And about the role that we should exercise in scrutinizing them. So it seems like he's saying that because Biden didn't go through Congress, that there might be precedent for overturning it.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. So the other angle they're saying... See. Yeah, we'll see. But if it does get voted down, the other angle that they said they could go... which is seen as a long shot, would be the Higher Education Act of 1965. So, 1965 law allows the Secretary of Education to compromise, waive, or release any right, title, claim, lien, or demand, however acquired, including any equity or any right of redemption. At first glance, this language seems to give the White House the power to forgive student loans. However, others maintain that the context of the legislation limits the executive branch. The Biden administration could have chosen to base the original student loan forgiveness plan on the 1965 Act, but didn't. So that is another option that they would probably do if it does get voted down. The main issue that I've seen in regards to that is just that it's going to take a lot of time and that it'll probably end up back at the Supreme Court.
Yeah, you know, in the meantime, hopefully there'll still be a pause on payments.
It looks like that's ending in October, though, right? Isn't that for sure, or do you think that that's for sure only if this goes through?
I don't know. I think it's only for sure if this goes through, but I don't know, and I think, you know, ultimately, like, you know, you've got to, if you're the Biden administration, you've got two reasons to do this. One, because it will have an economic benefit, and it has had an economic benefit,
and
so it's helped your standing. And two,
re-election.
You're going to gain voters from this. Because it will affect 50 million people,
right?
And so 50 million people being affected positively financially. Well, that's a reason to vote for somebody.
Right, right. And so, the far right, who are opposed to all of this, they weren't voting for you anyways.
Yeah, and so, you know, so I don't, I think that if this gets overturned, I think there are smart enough people in the administration who will figure out, like, oh, okay, well, let's find a workaround, like you had said.
And right.
So, yeah, and a lot of progressives are calling for even more loan forgiveness, so... There might be some of that in store. I don't know.
Right, right. So, yeah.
One can hope.
Yeah, so we'll find out those tomorrow, right? Lori Smith, her fate, and student loans. So, hopefully that goes well, and the court
fingers
makes the
crossed.
Right decisions. Yeah, fingers crossed on that. All right, any other thoughts on any of the issues?
No, I mean, I, you know. The Supreme Court scares me.
They scare me too.
They're scary.
This is the most partisan court I've I've ever seen in my lifetime. And so
I understand we have checks and balances, but it's like, man, it's just really hard to get anything done.
And there have been some cases that have gone really well. And there are some cases, you know, the decisions that we thought were, that I thought were well adjudicated, and then there are some that are questionable. You know, for instance, the one that we didn't talk about that was decided recently was, the Navajo Indians were saying that part of the treaty with the United States included access to French water, and the Supreme Court struck it down. And so the idea that the government has no obligation to provide or to be concerned with clean drinking water to the reservations, that was struck down by the Supreme Court. That's a that was a pretty devastating one.
Yeah, that's a pretty bad one. That's dead for sure. Wow.
Yeah.
Good Lord. Yeah.
So, we'll see. It's been a mixed bag so far, though. You know, so because the most important decision may have been already adjudicated, and that was the question of the states' rights plans when it came to voting. That states had the right to elect whatever electors they wanted. And so basically state governments deciding federal elections.
Yeah.
And the Supreme Court struck that down, but it was only by 5-4 margin.
Yes, that was close.
Yeah, democracy was saved by a vote.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's been a mixed bag, so we'll see what these have in store. Well,
All right. Well, thank you, Pod people, for joining us for this look at the Supreme Court issues that have been happening over the last couple days. We appreciate you, as always. I'm Ben, and Steve. Yeah. So, Pod people, you keep it real, and take care of yourselves out there. Have a great holiday weekend, and the holiday is actually on Tuesday. You probably know that. So, just have a great long weekend. All right. Thank you, guys. Spooky stuff.